All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Mr. Apple.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Okay, so the Oscars happened. That means we need to talk about it. We always go to one particular person when it comes to movies and films because he is a not one, not two, three-time board-certified critic now, our buddy Luis Mendez. Mendez Movie Report, this was your Super Bowl, my friend. You okay this morning down there?
I think I had one drink too many at the Oscar party. I went to the Tampa Theater, which is kind of becoming a bit of a new tradition for me. Went to the Tampa Theater, got to see it on the big screen, open bar, dinner that they served. Goes to a good cause because it does support the Tampa Theater itself, which is a small old school movie house theater that really, really relies on the tickets and events like this. But to be honest with you, if anything, I'm just happy the award season's finally over, because there gets to be a certain point where even if it's like your favorite film winning Best Picture, you get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm tired of talking about the same movies, so I'm kind of like ready just to restart the year.
Yeah, I hear you. And Tampa Theater, you were putting pictures online. Make sure you're following him, Mendez Movie Report. The Chicago Theater with the Chicago down the side. That's what Tampa Theater on the outside says, Tampa, right on the outside. Old school lights. I dig it. It looked like fun. Let's talk about the actual TV program portion of this, because there's a couple layers to the Oscars every year, because it is a cultural thing and a film thing. And this is when a lot of the normies pay attention to the critics, the one time a year they do. We had talked before previously with you is with the election season, and especially with Donald Trump winning, would that politics and the Oscars have always gone hand to hand, good, bad, or indifferent? How political was this Oscar show to you, who actually watches it every year and you don't just react to it? Because look, the same people are going to say it's political every year because that's their gig. How political of an Oscars was this to you who watch it every year?
I mean, there's always some politics in there. Conan took his shot at Trump regarding the Russia situation. The documentary, which is almost always is going to be political when it comes to documentary. But for the most part, I got to be honest, this is much less political than I would have predicted a couple months ago. I thought that for sure, and I was writing about this all the way back in the spring. I said that I think the next Best Picture winner will be affected by the election results. And to be honest with you, I don't think they really were. Now, I do think to an extent there were certain films in terms of nominees and other categories that maybe there were. Considering what happened the last couple of days regarding the whole blow up in the White House with the meeting with the president of Ukraine, maybe that would have helped a little bit change the documentary race, have voting been open for a little bit longer. But Best Picture ended up going to a rated R screwball comedy. And that I've been struggling to figure out how this movie is of the moment to me compared to the movie that I believe was the runner-up, Conclave. And I think at the end of the day, between the election, the fires, conversations with voters that I got to read about from folks who are in the know, I think at the end of the day, voters just decided that they were just going to gravitate to the movie that kind of made them feel good, and they gravitated to this movie that made a lot of them laugh. And ultimately, they went with the indie darling, Anora, which is a screwball comedy. One of my favorite films of the year, but to be frank, I don't think this is going to have the punch that the last 2 years Best Picture winners had. I could be wrong. You can never be sure how a movie's going to age, but I'd be surprised if anyone's still talking about this movie in 10, 20 years past, maybe hardcore cinephiles. So maybe it could become a Gen Z classic in terms of the comedy. It's definitely has a lot of Gen Z flavor in it. But yeah, I don't think it was as political as I thought there'd be. Now, maybe that could change next year, because already, as I've said before, it's one thing to maybe be tired by politics after an election, but then things actually start to happening when someone's in governance, and eventually the opposition is going to react to that. So, and we're already kind of seeing signs of that for anybody who's been paying attention to the public polling. So maybe next year is going to be a completely different story. I mean, next year I'm already looking at a Paul Thomas Anderson's got a satire coming out with Leonardo DiCaprio that kind of takes digs at sort of that MAGA mentality. Maybe that could be a movie that becomes a thing next year. Obviously, there's certain themes with Wicked and Wicked for Good's coming back next year. So maybe next year we'll see that. But this year, I have to say, I really don't think it was as political as you would have guessed, considering the election results.
Yeah, and I mean, I know the Best Picture winner is about a sex worker and a Russian oligarch, so you could probably find you a metaphor or two out of that if you really wanted to at some point. But what about the actual structure of the show? Because again, what trends on social media, what the general, because remember, this is the general audience, is one time a year they pay attention to this stuff. Yeah. You do it all the time. That's why I want to ask you about it. Some of the viral stuff, look, the Oscars is always going to get criticized no matter what they do by the general population, because it's pompous and self, you know, this is a big party thrown by the people that are celebrating themselves. So there's no way it's not pompous to some extent. That's part of the gig. However, yeah, I think it's a fair criticism that the Oscars, for probably the last few years especially, really seem to have an identity crisis. They don't know what this show is. And this year, some of the I'm going to throw you some of the viral stuff that's coming out in the news media. You tell me, as a critic that studies this, what you see. The Bond thing didn't go over real well. The David Lynch lack of David Lynch really bothered people. Some of the, you know, the speeches are what they are because you're dealing with people. So you're going to have some real awkward stuff there. They can't control that. Formatting wise, theme wise, that sort of thing. We'll get to Conan in a minute, because the host is, I think, even separate from that, because they're stuck in whatever the format is, right? Format of the show, it really felt like they didn't really know where to go, and they kind of smorgasborded it again. But that's kind of how it's felt for a couple of years now. Is that how it feels to you? Is that a fair criticism?
Well, I feel like the last show where they really seemed to have an identity by celebrating the movies was in maybe the pre-COVID years. Since then, I mean, you had the disaster that was the 2020 season ceremony, where they didn't have clips. They were in a train station. 2021 was Slapgate. And in the last couple of years, there's been kind of this they've kind of been messing around with certain little things, different skits, different tributes and stuff like that. I mean, I have to say, for my part, I didn't mind the Bond tribute. I thought it went over well, at least with me. At the same time, though, it did kind of feel that we were having these random tributes. Though I did like the song choices. I did enjoy the musical performances, especially the opening. I was a big fan of the opening. And which, I mean, this was one of the few years where they didn't have they didn't perform the original song contenders, which, quite frankly, I can't blame them, because this year's original song contenders were not good. But I would agree that they do seem to be struggling to find their identity. I personally enjoyed some of the tributes that they did, even though there were questions as to why to go ahead and put those tributes instead of just sticking to celebrating that year in movies throughout the whole show. But in terms of Conan, which I guess we could get into later, I do think Conan did a good job for the most part, considering what he was going to have to juggle.
Now, Conan is not my brand of comedy, but I appreciate what he does and understands he's really good at what he does. Like, he's a certain type of comedian. I think performance-wise, comedy is one of the hardest performing arts to do. I think stand-up comedy is one of the hardest things you can possibly do, and the guys that go from that and transition to TV, you are very, very good at that, to be able to do that. Whether you like their comedy or not, you can say, okay, just as a craft, he knows what he's doing. And he has a unique thing. It's not always my thing. Like somebody was writing, like, well, is he nervous or is he excited? But that's Conan's whole brand. So how would you know the difference between the two? There was a lot of that, right? But that's but he's always like, that's his stick, really. You know, he's the awkward, nerdy guy, but he comes out with the punchline. That's what he always does. I think he works good for the Oscars because the Oscars takes itself way too seriously, but they're also a room that legendarily does not, that they've got a pretty firm fence on how much fun you're going to poke at them at their big party. And Conan's a self-effacing guy who can straddle that fence probably just about as good as anybody in modern media. I don't think it's great, but I don't know that you're going to do better.
I mean, I really enjoyed his jokes. And I do appreciate that he didn't necessarily lean into too much skits, which is an issue that I would have had with. I mean, it's probably like the only real criticism I have with Jimmy Kimmel is that he really leaned into certain skits that maybe never played well. But I for the most part laughed. I thought he did a good job. He did take some jabs that even I personally wasn't expecting that he would take, because he's also been the kind of comedian that he's going to take jabs, but he's not like an edgy roaster compared to all these others, compared to like, say, a Nikki Glaser who hosted the Golden Globes. He's definitely more of a sort of playful jab kind of guy rather than just a really like, wow, make the room uncomfortable kind of guy. But he did make some jokes that I was surprised that even he took, particularly the jab he took at the Carla Sofia Gascon tweets at the beginning, which I did not think they would do considering that she was in the room. But I liked what he did for the most part. I would not be surprised if they extend an invitation to him if he wants to come back next year.
Yeah, Luis Mendez movie report. I want to talk about two specific things that happened in the program. I was actually on a flight, so I had to catch up with a lot of this post thing because I was flying and missed most of it and then had to drive back to the airport. So when I rewatched some of this morning, a lot of people were talking about the Bond segment. It was supposed to be a tribute, but it kind of hit, you know, look, everybody lives in a social media age. They're aware of what's going on with Bond. They know that it just got bought out. People are really freaking out over, you know, you can criticize Broccoli and the brain trust that has had that, but you're going to be really hard pressed finding another franchise that was that consistent for that long, whether you like it or not. That's rare. And now Amazon's got a hold of it. People are aware of that. So when they did this tribute, a lot of people were like, okay, this is a tribute that the New York Times said this is a tribute that sounded like an epitaph or a eulogy at a funeral is how it came off. How did it hit you? Because Bond's one of, you know, the Oscars have had a kind of love-hate relationship with big franchise properties. Here they are praising one that they've, you know, not a lot of Oscar love for Bond over the years, but it turned into this meta thing because of the news cycle. I think this is a good example of what we're talking about, that identity crisis. Like, they're trying to praise it, but it came off to the audience this other way because of what's happening in real time. I find that to be a fascinating little nugget on all the different streams that cross when you do the Oscars.
Well, I think one thing that the Bond franchise has enjoyed a lot of Oscar success with is their songs. And I think that's a big reason why it basically became a big musical medley in tribute to Bond. Though I do believe, I do still wonder and believe that had they had a hard 10 into 2012 season, I do think Skyfall definitely came close to getting to Best Picture. But yeah, I'm trying to keep an open mind when it comes to this Amazon situation, because I know it's very easy to get cynical about these about certain corporations or certain big studios kind of messing around with these franchises, and there is a fear that it could turn into a MCU Star Wars situation. The next thing you know, there's a Bond prequel series on Amazon. There's a Bond they're making the movies without much care or that compared to, you know, previous films that always took a couple years in between to come out because the Broccolis were always making sure that they wanted to have certain approvals done. I'm trying to keep an open mind to this until I see what happens with the way Amazon deals with, but there is definitely a lot of fear going around that the franchise might be leaving sort of a golden era, because the Daniel Craig films were probably the most well received critically, and those movies definitely did show up during award season in some level compared to maybe certain other films like the Roger Moore films. But even though I think the Roger Moore films are better than people give them credit for, for the most part, I didn't get the sense that it was a eulogy for me watching it, but I do get the sense that there are many others who do feel that way. There, I mean, when the news dropped about Amazon taking control, I mean, my feed, you would have thought that this was a death in the family, or a major death, celebrity death. They really took this hard. I'm trying to keep an open mind, but I do think people have plenty of reasons to be concerned over how Amazon is going to deal with this. And it is kind of funny that the Broccolis leave control of the franchise, and now, because they happen to get that governor's award, they had the tribute at the Oscars, and it does make you feel like, man, is this the tribute to? Is this almost like part of the in memoriam for the franchise?
Yeah. Speaking of franchises, somebody who, let me give you this stat of the day. Zoe Saldana gave a speech. Everybody loved it. She's talking about her mom. She got her Oscar. For people that, you know, the big pictures and the big franchises, here's your stat. She's in, let me make sure I read this right. She has starred in 4 of the 6 highest grossing films of all time, including the top 3. Marvel, Avatar. She's also in Star Trek, the new Star Treks with the Chris Pine Star Treks. She is really at a decently, you know, she's only 46 still, which Hollywood, that's kind of old, but she still seems kind of young to us, because I'm going to be 45, so don't tell me that's old. This is an incredible career. When you look at the critical acclaim and then you look at those box office facts, can you say an underappreciated Oscar winner when you look? Because the Oscar winners that have racked up that kind of success, and I know those are ensemble casts, so I don't want to get too carried away with it. But when you're talking about the generation that can do Marvel and get critical reception, that list is pretty short. She's done it.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the Academy was actually treating her almost like a female Robert Downey Jr. this year.
That's a great comparison.
And by the way, it's probably going to become a 5th film on there after this year, because she's going to be in the new Avatar, which is coming out at the end of this year. So she's definitely been always up there with franchises. She's worked with everybody, really, and I think that really helped her pull off the industry sweep. She was able to hold off Ariana, which the problem for Ariana was always going to be that this is like her first major film, and everybody's going to be constantly thinking about the fact that she's coming back next year anyway. So I think she was just kind of like the big narrative of the year. And she ended up being the one thing about that movie that didn't get caught up in the meltdown. When Emilia Perez had its incredible post-nominations meltdown, she almost kind of was helped by it in a weird way, because I think there were some folks who felt sorry for her. And she was the only one who was delivering good speeches. Every single Emilia Perez speech that I saw up on stage always made me cringe, always made me roll my eyes, except Zoe Saldana. And I really do wish that she would have won for what I think would have been a better film. I personally think that the other ladies that she were up against have better performances, but she easily had the better narrative. And I think it was a situation where they saw a chance to award someone that a lot of them have worked with. And you know, who knows if she'll get this chance again, because she's usually involved in franchises, not Oscar bait.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Yeah, Luis Mendez Movie Report. You just brought it up, so let's go ahead and get into it. We had actually recorded an episode about this that I screwed up somehow. I don't know what happened. The audio feed on my end messed up, and by the time I spent a week trying to fix it, the news cycle happened, and that's actually when all the Emilio Perez stuff happened, was during that while I was trying to fix it. I was like, all right, a lot of what we said just changed anyway, so I'm going to scrap it. That was my fault. However, we know about the social media comments and some of the viral video and all that. We know that's part of what sunk Emilio Perez. What you didn't know was, okay, it's falling apart. Who's going to benefit from that? When do you feel like the momentum shift to Anor? Because by the time you got to the Critics' Choice stuff, you were openly writing like, okay, Anor is the favorite now, or as close to a favorite as you have in an open year like we have. When did the momentum shift? Because yeah, that happened. Everybody covered it. But then after that happened, you have to have the reaction to get to that point. Give us that middle piece from the meltdown to Anora and these other films benefiting from it. What happened and how that went down?
So after the nominations, if you were to ask me, I would have said that this seems like a battle between the Brutalists and Emilio Perez. And both of those films won at the Golden Globes. So that seemed to be where we were headed. And those did seem to be the kind of movies that I could see being the kind of movies that they respond to a Trump second presidency with. Though I would argue one film is a stronger message than the other. But regardless, Emilio Perez got 13 nominations. It joins a very small list of movies that have gotten that many nominations. Oppenheimer last year got 13 nominations. The problem that Emilio Perez bumped into after the nominations was that Carla Sofia Gascon, the transgender actress who made history, was caught making many derogatory remarks about every group that you can think of under the sun going back years. And when I say people, every group you can think of, I just mean every group. Even us Christians caught strays, and we usually don't have to deal with the kind of things that other religious groups have to deal with. I mean, it was amazing. This woman had hate for everybody in their heart. And it just blew up and became such a big deal. And to make it worse, she went on an apology tour that included her getting defensive about it, and the whole movie's campaign completely collapsed. I actually think, in hindsight, while that made the movie's campaign collapse, I actually think it helped Zoe Saldana, because there was a lot of "I'm sorry" for her getting caught up in this. And I actually think that helped her campaign. And again, I think she was the most humble during awards season in regards to the controversies around the film. And then on top of that, the director got caught up in controversy where it sounded like he was taking shots at Spanish people and saying that they're poor and immigrants and poor migrants and such like that. And then he got caught at Critics' Choice when it won international feature. He got caught having this really cringe speech that people did not respond well to, where he made a comment about, oh, I have three speeches ready and all this kind of stuff. And the movie just completely collapsed under its weight. Now, I will say this before I go into the Anora search. I actually believe now that Emilio Perez would not have won even without the controversy. And the reason I believe that is because a lot of the voting for PGA, which is the Producers Guild, happened before the controversy happened. And there was some voting happening before the BAFTAs, the SAGs, before the controversy happened. also Directors Guild. And on top of that, this movie didn't just have bad audience scores. This movie had record-breaking low audience scores, and I think eventually that would have caught up to the film's preferential the preferential ballot that decides Best Picture, where you actually have to rank the Best Picture nominees. Because as I read the anonymous ballots, I noticed if you didn't like this movie, you were ranking it in the bottom three. And that is a recipe for not winning Best Picture. It's doomed movies with better audience scores than it. That being said, I do think the controversy cost it from winning a couple more awards that it would have won, particularly International Feature. A movie with 13 nominations should not have lost International Feature, but it did. And I will say that I was one of those who predicted that it would have that upset in International Feature. I thought I'm Still Here would win, and it did. When I thought that the whole momentum flipped to Anora was definitely the night of PGA and DGA, which is when the producers and the directors guilds vote. And what's interesting and what's key about the producers guild is that they do have a preferential ballot system like the Oscars. So most times the producers guild tells you what's going to win Best Picture. Not every time. There have been times where they've been off, but most times they will. And then they won directors guild. And nobody thought Anora was competitive for directing. We always thought it was a screenplay thing. Now, the day before Producers and Directors Guild was Critics' Choice, it won Best Picture and just Best Picture, which is the first time ever that's ever happened at Critics' Choice. So when that happened, there was a feeling like, that's interesting, but Anora was the critic favorite anyway. But then it won Producers Guild and Directors Guild, and I actually did a live stream with my buddy Dan Skip Allen, who also does film reviews, and we reacted in real time, and we basically watched in real time as the Emilia Perez frontrunner status collapsed, and Anora became the new movie to beat. Now Conclave bounced back, won BAFTA, won SAG. It was right there with Anora. But when it was all said and done, Anora ended up being the movie that the industry gravitated to. And it's the thing that I always say every year, that at the end of the day, when it comes to at least what's going to win the Oscars, you really do have to wait until we get to these major industry guilds, because before then, you're assuming things until you actually see the reality of what happens when industry voters are casting votes. I always remind people, Social Network looked like it was going to win Best Picture. We got to the guild and the industry was going for King's Speech. Boyhood looked like it was going to win Best Picture. We got to the industry guilds and they decided, no, we're all in on Birdman. At the end of the day, you have to wait until we get to those guild awards to see what industry voters are actually doing and voting for. And it was clear on PGA DGA night that they were voting for Anora, and Emilia Perez was not translating. And it wasn't just that, Andrew, because what a lot of people don't notice is that there are smaller guilds that people don't pay attention to: costumes, makeup, production design. And these are the people who, for all the talk about, a lot of these rich people giving themselves gold trophies, these are the people who people forget about. These folks do not get the kind of money that these stars do. These are folks who work a lot of hours sometimes for not the greatest pay. And when you looked at those guilds, Emilia Perez was underperforming. And if you can't get them on board with you and you're supposed to be the big 13 nomination movie, something's happening that they're not reacting to your film.
Yeah, Luis Mendez Movie Report. I'm glad you brought those folks up. That brings up one other thing from the actual program I wanted to mention. We'll go through a couple of categories real quick and what this all means. They hit on it more than once. This has become a theme, and I'm curious how it's hitting with a film critic who goes to the movies constantly. You and me have hashed this out. Going to the movies is not my favorite thing to do. It depends. Now, I have an art house theater I go to where they have like the half size screen with the full size projector, and it's like 50 of the recliner seats. That's my jam. I love that. That's nice, right? I can do the new AMC stuff where it's, you know, 100 people or whatever. I don't like the big stadium seating with the surround sound. However, I understand people like the big picture. They like going in cruises. Like, the Oscars hit that point a couple different times. The one director gave, you know, a fist pumping speech over make movies for the Sean Baker gave the fist pumping speech about we're going to make movies for the big screen no matter what. And Conan did the skit with Scorsese and all that about, hey, if you put all the cell phones together, you just have a movie screen in a movie theater. And they did the little fun thing, right? So the messaging is still there. This has been really consistent since COVID, which I get because a lot, you know, I think they even mentioned it on the show. There's some like 1,000 screens they've lost since COVID. But this is also on a TV program that's about movies that, from what I understand, Hulu's live feed on the stream failed a couple times and ticked everybody off.
Yeah.
This is a different world we live in. And we still have an industry in the movie and entertainment business who still hasn't figured out its place in the movie, streaming, TV, all of that. How's it landing? Because the whole go to the movies and save the movies thing, that you're only going to go so far with nostalgia. We're never going to fully lose movie theaters. That's not going to happen. They're going to be in some form. But how much of this change is still going on? Streaming, I think we're hitting some limits on what streaming can do, especially content-wise, especially, you know, they're getting the same awards recognition everybody else now. That's kind of evened out. Where are we at on this debate? Because them keeping bringing it up during the Oscars, I think that's just a good mile marker to kind of stop and go, okay, well, streamings came on strong. Now they're kind of on par. Is this thing kind of balancing where it might be for a few years?
I mean, it's you can make arguments either way. I've personally a little, I guess, I'm apathetic about the whole argument at this point because, look, I enjoy the theater experience. I want to see. I mean, when I want to see Wicked 9 times in the theater. So if there's a movie
that's just something you need to go to talk about with somebody, and we'll get you a little like we, Lewis. We're all here because we love you. And you just need an intervention on this Wick. No, I understand but the whole thing of Wick, that, you know, they built it up. You knew Gravity was going to be this 10-minute blow it out kind of thing on a screen, right? It's like going to Top Gun. Like, I don't even like going to movies, but when they film Top Gun, I'm like, oh, I'm watching that in IMAX because I just want to hear it and see it and feel it because it's, you know, it's one of them things. So I get it.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I saw Oppenheimer multiple times. I saw Dune Part 2 multiple times. I even saw the new Godzilla and Kong film multiple times in the theater. And I've gone to see old films in the theater just to see what it's like seeing them on the big screen. I've even got to see a 1920s film with someone actually playing the score to the movie. So I love the theatrical experience. That being said, a lot of us, when we grow up discovering certain classics, where do we first watch them? On the TV. Maybe not for kids catching it on a streaming device, but it's on the TV or our family saying, hey, I'm gonna pop on this. Well, for me, it was VHS growing up for a while, but now it's like pop on this DVD of this movie that I love and I grew up with, and I will not pass it down to you. Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, he did an interview about this a couple years ago, and you know, he's always been a little more chill about this compared to some of the other directors. He's like, look, at the end of the day, a lot of people will watch these movies on smaller screens. I do think that there needs to be a push for studios to have a longer longer theatrical window. I think it's ridiculous that Wicked was in theaters for a month, was making a bunch of money, and then all of a sudden Universal already has it available on demand. I mean, as far as I think they left money on the table doing that. Yes, there is money that be made on demand, but that money would have been there even after if you would have extended the theatrical window a little bit longer. So on that, I definitely do agree with the theater enthusiasts about. But at the end of the day, a lot of these movies are ultimately going to end up being on home media. You know, I went to see Wicked almost 10 times, I'm going to get the 4K. Because at the end of the day, I can't keep going to the theater, especially with the prices things are at these days. You know, you can't be – and that's even with me having the Regal Unlimited option or getting to go to free screen provided free screenings from studios for press. I think it's ultimately a battle between new ways that we're watching movies. But I think you can push for the theatrical experience, but you're just never going to go away from the fact that at the end of the day, a lot of these movies will ultimately be watched on smaller screens because you can't keep them up at the theater forever.
Yeah, Luis Mendez. There's a thing. This is one of your favorite categories, but it rolls right into this same debate over technology and stuff. The animation Oscar this year is just fast. Look, this one's going to get a little dorky, but I actually find this one fascinated. Flow won over The Wild Robot and Inside Out 2. I didn't know Inside Out 2 is the biggest grossing movie of the year. How did that happen? That really snuck up on people, right? But Flow won. There's no dialogue in this movie, and it was made with open source software. So if we're going to talk about this tech change and theater versus not theater debate, AI has been one of them hot topics inside of the industry for a while. And this wasn't strictly AI, but it's, you know, it's in that same realm. How are you going to use technology? So since I don't know what you want to pick, because, you know, I'm old enough to remember Pete's Dragon when it was a big deal, when the animated dragon would sing a song with Mickey Rooney. But we've gone from that to we've gone to digital animation. We've gone through the Pixar era now. A lot of people, you know, younger than me grew up with that sort of digital animation. So that's not new now. Now you've got open source software winning an Oscar for a film that's all visual, no dialogue. That feels significant. It's from Latvia too. So congratulations, Latvia, a wonderful country that's got some geopolitical issues that we know about. That feels like a big deal. That feels like a little bit of an underpinning culture change. It's like maybe they're not ready for that for the live action stuff, but for them to go around some pretty heavy hitters, and The Wild Robot had a lot of big people pushing it and advocating for it. This feels significant to me.
I think this has something to say about the growing international block within the Academy, because this was also nominated for international feature. And I will say, look, Flow was one of my top 20 fave films of the year. I actually personally would have voted for it in international feature. But it is interesting that this is a small movie that was made using that software. And then it opened up at Cannes. The word of mouth started to build. The movie releases late. The word of mouth builds even stronger. And then what I think was really key for this film is that the critics pushed this movie pretty heavily. It ended up being a real back and forth battle between The Wild Robot and Flow for critics' wins. And at the end of the day, it ended up being a tight animated feature race. Flow won Golden Globes. Wild Robot won the Annies, which is kind of like the Oscars of animated films. It also won with the Producers Guild. But then Wallace and Gromit kind of threw a wrench into things and won over at BAFTA. And then we went into the night with thinking Wild Robot would be the winner. Now, I have to call myself out because I started getting a little too cocky. I thought, yeah, this is Wild Robot all the way, and Flow ended up pulling off the upset. I think this is just at the end of the day that Flow picked up such incredible word of mouth support, the growth of the international block of the Academy. And on top of that, I remember a few days before the Oscars on my YouTube feed, there's this Gen Z guy that I follow, that I subscribe to, Mr. Gigi, who likes it. He basically reacts and makes fun of bad movies and crazy stuff like that going on in pop culture. And he actually did a video on Flow and talking about how much he liked the movie. And that made me go, wow, okay, maybe I'm a little way too confident that Wild Robot's got this. Because when it's starting to kind of break a little bit into more mainstream areas like that, This tells me that the International Block of the Academy is really flexing their muscles now, and that we have to be really careful about what we think is winning animated feature. Because a year ago, last year, Boy and the Heron, an animated Miyazaki film, upset the new Spider-Verse film. And I think that this tells me that in the future, when I make my predictions, which I only got five wrong, I have to really seriously take into account that what wins animated feature now is something that's completely different from what's won in the past. And I think these big studio animated movies that want to compete for this award have to start taking these smaller international features much more seriously.
Yeah, it's really a global community with these movies now, especially with so much money being made overseas. And a movie can be made or break whether or not China will take it, or whether or not they can play it in parts of Asia or parts of Europe or censorship.
I'm just going to hit it. To that extent, sorry to cut you off, but to that extent, there's this new Chinese animated film. That's a big, that just broke the record for most, for a highest grossing animated film ever. Critics are going crazy over it. I haven't caught up to it myself, but that might be a movie to keep an eye on in the animated feature race next year. Yeah, it's a big grosser, but it's like, it just might be something to keep an eye on for this continuing trend in international animated films.
Yeah, we'll look at that. Luis Mendez, I just want to hit a couple of these Oscar, the acting stuff real quick. There was a lot of discussion. Would this be one of the years where Best Picture and Best Director got split off? It turned out it did not. Did that surprise you coming? You already talked about the guilds. Did you see that one coming? Because a lot of people thought this might be one of those years because it was more of a wide open field. You talked about it. This was kind of a late consolidation. And once again, Best Picture, Best Director, hand in hand.
Yeah, I do think the director was probably really close. I mean, this director race was wild. I have never seen critics disagree this much on director. They disagreed to the point that when we got the Critics' Choice, John Chu of Wicked pulled off one of the biggest upsets in Critics' Choice history, and he's not even nominated for an Oscar, and he won the Critics' Choice Award for director. And then Sean Baker wins at DGA. We think, okay, so is that where the industry going? And then Brady Corbet of The Brutalist wins at BAFTA. And then ultimately it ended up being a Best Picture win. Matt Neglia, who I highly suggest people check out over at Next Best Picture if they're interested in this stuff, he made a good point that this reminded him a lot of Parasite, where that movie was like, it seemed to have this very like weak path to Best Picture. And then we get to Oscar night and it just ends up winning everything that it could. And I think that's what ultimately ended up happening to Nora. And it's something that I predicted would happen. So I'm not too surprised.
All right. You don't usually get gasps from the audience for an award winner. Mikey Madison got one because everybody thought Demi Moore might as well stencil her name on the statue. She handled it very gracefully. This is obviously not her fault. But she even collapsed her mouth in the clip I saw.
Yeah.
There was an audible gasp when Demi Moore did not win for actress.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I was one of those people who was not saying to put her name on the Oscar. I predicted Mikey to pull off the upset because she won at BAFTA. And I said, when she won a BAFTA, I said on Twitter, and I got a lot of crap from it from people, that I thought Demi lost the Oscar right there and then. Because it showed me that there were industry voters who were not getting behind Demi's narrative. And if Mikey was in the supposed Next Best Picture winner, historically, if you're a lead actress in a Best Picture winner, you're like right on the verge of winning that Oscar. And SAG was held after voting ended at the Oscars this year because of the fires. And Anora did not have a great night at SAG, which was weird because usually SAG goes pretty hand in hand with Best Picture. But I wasn't as surprised as other people. I think at the end of the day, they loved Anora so much that she was able to go for, she was basically a coattail effect. That's basically what happened.
Yeah. Adrian Brody wins his second Oscar. not quite 20 years apart, pretty close. What do you make of him? Because when you start getting a second acting Oscar, that's some that's a very short list, right? He's always been really well respected. He does have a bit of a thing where he plays Adrian Brody a lot. You know, it's kind of hard to not be Adrian Brody. I don't mean, look, Matt Damon's Matt Damon in every movie. Tom Hanks has this problem now. He's always Tom Hanks, right? John Wayne's a legend for playing John Wayne and always having the tallest horse and all that. What's his kind of reputation now? Because now he's solidified. You're one of the acting greats. He's still a relatively young guy. He can do what he wants to do. But what's his industry reputation now, do you think?
I think it's always been pretty good. I mean, he's been in very Oscar-nominated films, Best Picture-competing films. He's just never been able to get that nomination again. He got it again, and this time because of the accent, even though there was some slight controversy regarding potential AI being used to help with the accent, the accent that he puts on, the range that he shows in this movie, I think it just helped him to go get over the top. And I do think Brutalist was probably number three in Best Picture. Unfortunately, they never revealed the tallies to us, but I do try to figure out what probably was the order. I do think Brutalist was number three, and that helped him a lot compared to overcome Timothée Chalamet, who I do think is on his way to eventually getting an Oscar, but clearly they're doing to him what they did to Leo. They're making him have to wait for it. And I think this was their chance to give Adrian Brody recognition for his work through the years. Because his first win was a bit of a surprise. He was a young dude, pulled off that upset. This time around, he was the favorite going into it. And I think they just kind of confirmed to him that they do respect his work.
Yeah, and Brutalist also won cinematography, which is kind of an important one to kind of gauge how that people think about the movie. So there's that. We already talked about Zoe. Kieran Culkin, who won an Oscar, and then I don't know how to describe this to a family-friendly audience, propositioned his wife for more children, and we'll leave it at that. You know, he's had an interesting career. He's handled it pretty well by all accounts. What do we do with his win here in a movie called Real Pain that very few people have watched but probably will go find now?
Yeah, I think it's available on Disney Plus and Hulu if anyone wants to check it out. It's a really good movie. It's funny. It's also a bit touching at times because it is, at the end of the day, about two cousins going on a tour of basically a tour of Holocaust sites. But in between that, they're going into hotels and they're getting on each other's, they're basically a real pain to each other, as the title says. He's good in the movie. He's great. I do question why this is what they got behind. I'm not saying that anything against the man, but I look at what he was up against, and it's kind of head scratching, especially since Real Pain ultimately ended up missing even getting into Best Picture. And typically you're going to be acting winners, their movie is going to be in Best Picture. So it's interesting that they saw his performance and they just kind of checked him off the box for him. He was one of the sweepers this year. He won everywhere. He did not slip up anywhere. So he's always done well with the TV awards too. So clearly there's something about him that the industry really loves. And after what he's done here, I am very curious to see what other movies he does in his future, because maybe he starts becoming a staple at the Oscars the way that he was at the Emmys.
What do we do with Wicked, knowing there's a part two coming out? What do we do with Dune? There's going to be a part three coming out. They won a lot of technical awards, costume design, sound, visual effects, these sorts of things. Didn't get the acting awards, although you talked about the director at the screen. Here we go again, because we keep seeing sequels, and now we've got big ticket, critically acclaimed sequels. That's kind of the joke in Hollywood, that all they know how to do is do sequels. But the award season, Oscars have got to figure out how to navigate this thing, right? Because we kind of went through this with Peter Jackson of like, well, he'll get it on the third one, right? Because you knew there was going to be three. But you just said it, you know, about Ariana Grande. Well, it's her first one, and we know she's going to be back. Is that dangerous for an award show to kind of get into a groove of doing that? Of like, well, you'll get yours eventually. You'll get, because even if it's true, even if you know Timothée Chalamet may be in this, you know, he may be in that boat with the third one, because if you know the Dune story that's going to come, I won't do spoilers, but he's going to have some range to pull that one off. We'll leave it at that. You know, he's going to be out there. And he had two really good movies, because he had Dune and then he had the Bob Dylan biopic, which he was actually nominated for. So that sometimes plays against you when you're up for two. But to the general audience, though, I don't know that the general audience, that they're having a hard time retaining and bringing in the new audience. They don't want to hear that. That's too much inside baseball for them. They're just like, no, it's a good movie. Judge this movie. It starts turning into the Baseball Writers Hall of Fame of like, well, you don't get first place votes. And the general public's like, what's wrong with you, man? Just give us our guy. I think this is a bad thing for the Academy that already has a problem with tone deafness. When you start gaming out who's going to win and where, I think that really turns the general audience off. That's already predisposed to kind of see you suspiciously. Is that fair?
That Baseball Hall of Fame analogy there is probably perfect, considering where we're headed now with these part ones, part twos, and stuff like that. It is dangerous because there's no guarantee that that other part is going to have the same award success. I mean,
there's no defying gravity in part two of Wicked.
Right.
I'm not trying to give spoilers. There's a big song and dance number. They've actually put one in that wasn't in the stage play. I get all that. Wicked is defying gravity. That's the high spot. Like, we're both wrestling fans, right? That's throwing Mick Foley off the cage. That, like, there's stuff that's going to come after that, but that's what everybody's going to talk about 20 years from now.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you've already set up. And I'm not picking on Wicked. I liked Wicked. I thought it was a good movie, but I'm not even a Broadway guy. That's the song I broke out for 20 years to kind of needle people, right? You know, start defying gravity. You've already had the high spot.
Yeah.
So
The second part is darker. The first half of that play is what made that play popular. No pun intended.
Dune 5 turns into a god worm. Like, are we gonna, like, you can't, not, I don't think they're gonna film that, but in the book, sorry, if you haven't read a 50-year-old sci-fi book, that's your bad. You know, when the sun turns into the god worm that's eternal and he has the body of a worm, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, and that's going to be very, very challenging for Denny. Now, so far, Denny has done a pretty good job considering how dense the source material he's dealing with is. But he's
going to stop well short of that, I guarantee you. I will bet my mortgage absolutely. He does not go that far.
I actually have my own personal theories. I want to be careful because I don't want to, like, spoil it for people.
I don't want to do spoilers, but I think we're going to get the preacher. I think that's where we're going, but I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I think something like that, because I do this. Apparently, this next one is where he's going to end things. I don't think he's going to get into the really when it gets really off the wall. But even that is going to be a little bit harder to sell than these last two movies, especially coming off the second one, which had much more action than the first film did. This third one is definitely more in the spirit of the first film than the second film, depending on how he tackles this, and so there's a chance that it doesn't hit with the Academy voters in a way that they want to return the king at. There's a Wicked for good. What happens if the second part is not as well received critically? I mean, it should do well box office wise regardless, but what happens if it's not the contender that it was? You know, there's a chance for that to happen, and we've seen this happen even with non-franchises. Paul Thomas Anderson still does not have an Oscar because there have been so many times that we get to have a chance and they decide, oh, but this person might not have the chances that Paul's going to have in the future. Like, there's this stuff happens, and you are taking a risk if you keep thinking, oh, but that person's going to get it next time. And there was some stuff going on social media about some of the stuff people were reading in the anonymous Oscar ballots. Like, And I always tell people, I've been reading these anonymous ballots for years now. It just gives you an insight into that these voters are, they'll do some crazy stuff with their choices. They have different movie tastes than the critics do. Like I'm not surprised at all by some of the stuff that was coming out from some of these voters. But yeah, it is a risk. It is a risk when you do that kind of stuff, because there is no guarantee that movie's going to be as that the next part of that movie is going to be as successful. But this is something we're going to have to keep an eye out on, because I do believe with a hard 10, with blockbusters not just being a bunch of superhero movies anymore, we have to start anticipating that one or two of the best picture nominees are going to be big populist films.
And I want to bring it up just, you know, and again, I've lost all care about the wider Marvel Cinematic Universe, but we deal with this every time award season comes around. And I'm not picking on Marvel. It's just, look, when you got the biggest picture of all time and it's part of your cinematic universe, that's the totem pole that you're going to go to discuss this stuff, right? You know, the Captain America movie came out. It did fine by all, you know, measures of how much money you're going to make and stuff. But here we go again. How much formulas are only going to get you so far? There's fatigue here. I don't care what anybody says. I don't know that anybody was really clamoring to see Harrison Ford CGI'd up. I've liked Anthony Mackie since the Marshall movie, because, again, biased, because I'm from West Virginia and I thought he carried that thing and did an amazing job in it. I like Anthony Mackie. I don't think it's their fault. I just think this Marvel and Disney have got to figure something out, because they're, let's go to another wrestling term, they're going to start getting bad heat pretty quick on some of this stuff if they don't change direction. And I'm a skeptic, so I'm going to be on that board a lot faster than some people do, but you know, people are buying it, but it's sliding and it's sliding. And the problem with sliding is eventually you fall off a cliff.
I mean, they're damn near off that cliff, if you ask me at this point. I mean, I wasn't able to make my press screening for Captain America, so I just went and saw with a regular audience, as people would say. And that there's actually some help to being able to do that as a critic when it comes to these mass appeal films, because you get a feel of what the audiences are responding to. And I watched that movie and the audiences were not responding to that movie like I remember watching other Marvel movies with other audiences. And then, and you saw it in that it had a pretty mid cinema score for a Marvel movie. It's box office is not, I mean, I still remember the days where the MCU movies used to be guaranteed near or at billion-dollar films. And lately, they have not been that. I think at the end of the day, the only way that there's any hope for the MCU to somehow get back on track, and I think they know it, is this Fantastic Four movie. That seems to be what they're really just moving all their chips in. And I have to tell you...
Hold on a second. This will be the fourth or fifth iteration of the Fantastic Four in my lifetime on the big screen. Are we yes. on four or five? So let me just break down the sentence you just said. Their big plan is to re-up something that's already been done at least four times already, and neither of the last two worked.
Yes.
Like right there's the problem, yeah?
Well, so I'm trying to keep an open mind in that. I think they might finally get it right this time. But I will tell you this. I've had this very interesting reaction to these superhero trailers. I watched the Superman trailer, and a lot of people have been excited about that. They feel like maybe this new change in DC can maybe revitalize the genre. I watched the Fantastic Four trailer. I could not gain any excitement or reaction from either trailer compared to other people. And I was asking myself, why is that? And I think it's because I feel watching these trailers, I'm seeing what I've seen elsewhere. And I think I've reached that point where a lot of these movies are almost like they're starting to all kind of look and feel the same. And I just have started to tune out. Now, maybe obviously a trailer and an actual movie is a completely different thing. I might watch the movie and be like, oh, wow, okay, now I'm excited again. But I think that I do think fatigue is actually starting to become a very real thing. And I don't know how much nostalgia can work for so long. I mean, they got away with Deadpool and Wolverine, but I think that was also a lot of people wanted to see Hugh and Ryan finally together in a movie like that. So I think they're just cashing all their chips in on Fantastic Four. I think it could work for them, but it is a gamble, because if it does not work for them, they're in deep trouble, because they're clearly, that's supposed to be the lead up to this Avengers Doomsday stuff with the, and that's on top of the controversy with RDJ being in that movie playing someone else. So that good luck to them on the gamble.
Yeah, I just wonder, and again, not my bag, but my kids have grown up, you know, my kids have grown up watching all that. I've got one kid that every Marvel movie wants to go see it the second it comes out. All right, fine, whatever. Let me put it to you this way, and I know that Marvel's not my demographic anymore because I've aged out of it. It is a formula. We're going to have sarcastic humor. We're going to have CGI, and you've already heard my CGI rant, so I won't bore you with that again. It's sarcastic humor. It's CGI. We're going to have the big set pieces. We're going to have all the intertied backstory stuff. But the problem with a formula, again, is how many Marvel movies since Iron Man now? Because that's what really kind of kicked off the modern era. And by the way, it was accidental. They didn't know Iron Man was going to be this big hit. So, you know, there's been a lot of revisionist history on that, too. So we're, what, 40-some movies in now, major, not counting all the streaming stuff? You can only look, you can only watch Macho. Let's go to wrestling again. You can only watch Macho Man come off top rope with the elbow so many times because you're like, oh, he did the elbow thing. It's not, oh, my God, did you see that? Like, you just, they don't have anywhere else to go with it. They have beaten the horse to death. I don't know what they're going to, you know, they're going to, my fear is they're going to do the Fantastic, I don't want to make this a Marvel podcast. You know, like, it's like, oh, the guy from The Mandalorian's playing a Marvel movie now. That's the zone they're in now. You know what I mean? Because it's so interactive and it's so intertangled. They've made their own box.
I mean, and then on top of the MCU shows, there's something, the new Captain America, that I legitimately was not aware of because I don't watch the MCU shows. I got too many movies to watch. I don't got time to watch these MCU shows. There is this sort of sense of having to do homework and all that stuff. And again, I think eventually crowds are been dwindling. I mean, maybe they, I mean, there's still enough crowds that people go see this, but I just don't sense anywhere near the excitement. And I think, and they're missing out, because right now, to take this full circle back to the Oscars, even though they're getting more international, even though they're awarding the indie movies like a Nora Best Picture, you've been seeing these big blockbusters, Barbie, Top Gun, Maverick, Wicked, Dune. I mean, they gave a genre film. They gave the first ever sci-fi film to win Best Picture, which in itself, at times during that movie, there's almost like a superhero aspect to it. And the MCU has been missing out because they've been in the middle of their worst period in quality of films. Again, they're clearly cashing their checks in to try to recharge this with Fantastic Four. I wish them luck because I do want to get excited about these movies again. But I'm going to have to see it before I'm going to have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I watched Conclave. I loved the movie. I thought it was fantastic. I know there's controversial stuff in there. It didn't bother me because I don't look to Hollywood for validation of my faith stuff. So it didn't bother me one little bit. I like Dogma is one of my all-time favorite movies, for that matter, if you really want to get into it. So, yes, I both study theology and I like Dogma. You know, send your tweet if you have to. I found it great. There's another movie. Let's go ahead and talk about the next controversy to end this up. This Snow White thing, another headache for Disney as they try to right the ship over there. This Snow White thing is really shaping up to be a problem. Now, to be fair, the grifter class online political folks, we're going to jump all over this no matter what happened. All right. Yeah. So let me just lay that out. Anybody that's followed this program, if you just grift for grift's sake, I don't care if you're right or not, your underlying motive's bad and I'm not interested. So they were going to pile on this anyway. Disney and the people involved have done themselves absolutely no favors and have decided to charge right into the barbed wire on a lot of this. I understand they've redone parts of it. I understand they've remade parts of it. It's a live action feature that now one of the key characters in the Seven Dwarfs are all now CGI. Go explain that one to me. This feels like one of those things that's going to get bigger than just a picture that may not perform at the box. This feels like this may be, you know, let's go to a wrestling term again, just because it's fun and we all got it on our mind. This thing's almost going to have nuclear heat on people is how it's feeling. This may get ugly in the culture wars in a big old hurry, both good, bad, and different, deserved, undeserved. This just looks like one where everybody's going to put their flag on the heel and fight over it. Does that feel like it to you?
I'll tell you this. There's a potential that we actually avoid that, and I'll tell you why. There's a potential everybody can't stand this movie anyway, because this movie, everything I've seen from these trailers have made me cringe, have made me and look, I've tried to defend these live action remakes more than other people. I actually really like the Little Mermaid remake. I actually like the Aladdin remake. But they've been very hit or miss. There have been some, I mean, like the Lion King remake, which was completely lifeless. The Mulan live action remake, which bored me. They've been very hit or miss. Now they're doing the Snow White thing, and there was a lot of controversy because Peter Dinklage came out and talked about his issues regarding how dwarves are using that story. And my personal take has always been, when it comes to that, is I'll hear you out and listen to you and take in your perspective. But at the end of the day, a movie's a movie. I'll watch it and judge it on its own. Just like I always complain about my issues with the way Puerto Ricans are used in West Side Story. But I'm not going to damn anyone if they happen to like the movie. I mean, to some extent, I understand why. There's a lot of things that haven't aged well in Gone with the Wind, and I take that and I take it serious what people say, but I still think it's one of the greatest films ever made. That being said, I don't know if the answer was to CGI the dwarves. I mean, they butchered my boys. They butchered my boys. I don't understand why this was necessary. You could have done this in a different, you really could have done this in a better way. I still can't believe watching the trailers, what they did to them, what they did to them. And then on top of that, I understand that there are things about the original that maybe have not aged as well. You want to try to create, maybe give Snow White more agency and stuff like that. But the problem that you can bump into when you try to do that is you start adding more to the source material, and before you know it, you've bloated it. And all of a sudden you've really kind of messed with what you're trying to show. And of course, on top of that, Gal Gadot doesn't look like she's particularly good at acting as the evil queen. And Rachel Zegler hasn't made things helpful for herself, because she has made some questionable comments in media. I understand what she was trying to say, but she really has kind of like almost like put her hand in the culture war beehives at times. So I got to tell you, I think this is a disaster in the making. I'd be surprised if this movie has good critical scores. Maybe, you know, you never know. There have been surprises, but it's the only major film coming out over the next 2 months or so, because 2025 is off to a pretty rough start. It does look like we're going to have to wait until this early summer until things really start kicking in. But I think this is a disaster in the making, and I think it's going to get barbed from all sides.
That's the other part of it, is it's almost a standalone. It's like screwing up on Monday Night Football. You do it on Sunday, at least it's like the second out of 10 highlight clips, right? When it's a standalone game, they're going to talk about it all day Tuesday, because they already talked about Sunday on Monday, right? It's the only show in town. It's right in the middle of all the political stuff. It's going to come out right about the time all the congressional deadlock mess happens, with, not to get political on talking about movies, but that's about the time we're going to be dealing with the budget and the continuing resolution. And Lord knows what Trump and everybody else is doing at that point. It almost looks like, if you look at the calendar and you look at the news cycle and you look at what's going, it's almost like a perfect storm of, okay, there's nothing going on that week. God forbid there's a disaster. We're all going to fight about this, and this is going to be the character of the day for a couple of days. I mean, like, you can see it kind of come. I hope it doesn't happen. I'm just – somebody's been doing this a while. You try to – you can't always – you don't predict the future. Yeah. You can kind of see, like, roughly where the lightning's going to strike or – you know – you can't, you don't know where the tornado is, but if you're going to be in Oklahoma in tornado season, you got a better chance. I try to do a little bit of that. I'm looking at the calendar, the political cultural calendar, and I'm like, this thing is a perfect storm at the perfect time for a lot of people that are ticked off about a lot of other stuff and they want that avatar to beat on. And I think this might happen, man.
It could, but again, like I kind of, to circle back,
so everybody hates it so much, they're just like, whatevs.
Yeah, I wonder, because it kind of reminds me of Emilio Perez, where I was surprised there wasn't some big culture war about that, considering some of the subject matter in there, but everybody didn't like it, so it kind of just came.
But nobody in America saw it.
To be fair, Emilio Perez is a much smaller movie than Snow White is going to be.
But nobody in America saw Emilio Perez. I'm not, no disrespect to the filmmaker. Nobody in America saw it, and it's about a foreign country.
It's the only Best Picture, not Best Picture contender of Netflix that didn't even show up in the top 10 on Netflix.
Yeah, like nobody saw it, so there's no controversy. Here's the thing. You don't have to see Snow White to get know what the problem is. Everybody knows what the problem is going to be with this thing because everybody can sing the song. Literally every kid in America for the last 70 years has sung that song, had it whistled at them something. That's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mean, look, if people want to get themselves involved in culture war, go ahead. I mean, I mean, at least do it over a good movie. Because, I mean, I haven't seen the movie. Maybe I'll see it. I'll be like, oh, whoa, the traitors really misjudged this film. But I don't know. Everything I've seen, I don't think this movie's going to be particularly good. And hopefully that helps drive down any culture war stuff with it.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I hate when it interacts, but when it does, sure does make good TV, as the president said after a disastrous press conference lately. Luis Mendez, that's why we talk to him. He's a critic. He doesn't just talk about this stuff. He knows it. So, Mendez Movie Report, you're doing more podcasting stuff. You're doing more media stuff. I know you're getting ready to take a break because this is your post-Super Bowl, so you're going to take a little break and readjust. You'll be back just in time for that Snow White mess we were just talking about. But we appreciate the time. Let folks know where they can follow you, keep up with you. We'll put all the links on hertel.substack.com. I got to get you over on the Substack. We need to do one of them Substack Live things, man. We'll figure out how that stuff works. Tell folks how to follow you, my boy.
Yeah, so I will be taking a break, but please do. But that does not mean that I'm going to be taking a break from social media. And eventually, within 2 months' time or so, I definitely will be back providing new content. Mendez Movie Report, that's my Substack, film reviews, Oscar projections, even though I will be taking a longer than usual break on Oscar projections this year. I'm going to take a much bigger break than before. And then list of classic films and such like that. Social media, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Twitter/X, Blue Sky, and even if you're on Letterboxd under Mendez Movie RPT. You can find all my stuff there. Even during my break, I will still be posting a little bit on social media.
Yep. We look forward to it, buddy. And because he was so subtle about putting it, but yeah, he had his best prediction season ever. I think he mentioned that only three or four times.
Since 2021. Remember 2021? I only missed two. I'm still chasing that year.
Yeah, well, that's why you don't gamble, my friend. You always end up chasing it. Luis Mendez, you do great work stuff. Make sure to follow all him. We'll send all the links. We'll talk again in a couple of months, buddy. Appreciate the time.
I appreciate you always coming on.
Thank you, sir. All the music on Her Tell is provided under a creative content license from MonsterCat.com. Somos la máquina.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.